All right, this is Chairman Nathan Wakefield calling the meeting to order at 7:36 p.m. Eastern Time. Okay. Quick roll call. Nathan Wakefield, I am present. Louis Saradek?
Present.
Thank you, Louis. Bob Newman?
Present.
Noel Yee?
Present.
Marvin Ong?
Present.
Shavela Schwab?
Present.
Thank you. Mike Sullivan?
Here.
Afton Benson? Afton is absent. She let me know in advance. Aaron Stevens? Also absent. She let me know in advance. Martin Frost?
Ho ho.
Thank you, Martin. Jim Maxwell?
Present.
All right. Did I miss anybody that is on the call that I didn't name? Perfect. Moving on. Would someone like to make a motion to approve tonight's agenda?
This is Shavela. I will make the motion.
Thank you, Shavela. Do we have a second?
This is Louie. I'll second.
I heard Louie. I'm going with Louie. Any discussion, guys? Moving to vote. Does anybody abstain from approving tonight's agenda? Any opposition? Agenda is approved. Moving on to the approval of minutes from last board meeting, February 15th, 2016. Would someone like to make this motion?
Shavela, I will.
Thanks, Shavela. Do we have a second?
Bob will.
Thank you, Bob. Any discussion? Move to vote. Does anybody abstain from voting on the approval of February 15th minutes? Any opposed? Minutes are approved. Moving on to reports. Starting out with the financial report. Afton is not here, but she was able to submit this report. I'm going to give everyone just a minute in the event that they have not already read said report. Do we have any discussion about the Treasury report? All right, guys, moving right along to festival discussion with Jim Maxwell.
Okay, let's see. So I just uploaded a festival report. Apologize for the last minute, but you should have that. Now I'm trying to pull it up. Done there. And so early bird registration closed, and we've got 189 total packages sold. 149, that can't be right. Oh, yeah, that is correct. So a total package. Three of those were after the early bird deadline. So we've got three adult and one senior event package that came in after the early bird deadline. So those are at full price. And then we have 149 at the early bird adult, 19 senior early bird, and 17 youth early bird. That is less than what I had projected in the budget. So hopefully we can make those up in the regular registration cycle. I feel pretty good about that, but obviously would have preferred to meet the goal that I had set. But we didn't fall terribly short from that. I had originally estimated 175 for adult and 50 for youth and senior. So If you look at the dollar difference, that's about $9,000 that we did not pull in for early bird registration. And again, I'm hoping that I underestimated the regular registration, online registration. I estimated 30 adult packages and 30 youth and senior packages. So I'm really hopeful that we will get over that. There is precedent for previous years of getting much more than that, but yeah, that's what I guessed. Let's get back to that. There were some registration issues in that several people indicated that the registration system is clunky and burdensome, primarily because you have to register or you have to renew or join the IJA in order to complete the registration. So in other words, you have to complete that transaction entirely and then go back in and register as a member. I talked to Mike about this at length, and basically there is a way to do it, to stream it all into one transaction, but then that would require the festival or the memberships director to go back and then verify those memberships. And we agreed that we can't really do anything about it this time because the registration is already live. We don't want to tinker with the live system. But I believe, and Steve Wiswell, who's my partner here, believes that there is a way to make that happen in YM. It may involve basically opening a help ticket and saying, hey, is there some way that we can write, you know, put some code in there so that it will verify the membership information for us. But my larger point is that that's why we you know, went to an integrated AMS to begin with. So there really should be some way for YM to be able to do that. If not, then I think we've invested in a really bad system. So that's basically the issue for that. Per our conversation last meeting on comps, I've held the number of comps to 35, and that's primarily for performers, and then there are about a dozen of the year-round volunteers plus two IJA videographers. And I shared this list with Nathan, and he agreed that that was a good list. There was some issue with the fact that the performers, when we were first talking to them, there was no mention of the fact that they have to be IJA members in order to even go online and claim their festival comp. So rather than going back and telling performers, which is very atypical, by the way, to, you know, when you're hiring a performer, to require that they be a member of the organization. And so I decided not to do that, and consequently, any performers who do not wish to join the IJA, I am putting them on my family membership. And so far, only two of the performers that I've contacted have taken me up on that. There are several other performers that either are already IJA members or are becoming IJA members. But that's just something to keep in mind for next year. Then in terms of, as I mentioned last meeting, there are a number of volunteers at the festival who in the past several years have received comps. I've told them this year that I've explained the situation with Quebec and said that right now we don't have comps for them. And for the most part, everybody has agreed, and indeed several of them have already purchased their package. So nobody has said, no, I can't do this if I don't get comped. One possible exception to that, and he was never a firm yes anyway, and that is Jeff Marsh, who has told me that he cannot be the busking coordinator. And so right now I don't have a busking coordinator, and at this point I don't have a budget for busking. And as I understand, that doesn't really need much of a budget anyway, but the fact remains that there's nobody to run it. Jeff had suggested two people possible people that could do it in his place, and they are Becca Hammond and Michael Rossman. Becca was offered the position, and she has declined. I've not yet approached Michael Rossman, but I did look and see, and he is not yet registered for the festival. So that's where we are with that. Special workshops, we've got Emil Dahl, and that one is published. We've also got Alexandra Savina, who is from the Ukraine. We're currently waiting to get her visa confirmed, and we're also not sure what we're going to do about an interpreter for her because her English is minimal at best. And also, we were originally hoping to get Alexander Kublikov, and he would serve as an interpreter, and but he has not he has backed out. He's not able to come. So we're on the lookout for somebody who can speak Russian to help interpret for Alexandra. The Gauntlet team has proposed 10 of their obstacles, and those are in the report. Those look pretty interesting. There's one or two repeats, but most of them are new and creative. And of course, that's all between the Gauntlet crew and UNAMED. So UNAMED has been sent this proposal as well. They are also going to work on a crowdfunding video and campaign to help generate matching funds for UNAMED's contribution. And then finally, update on brunch. I've put links in the report for the two proposals that we have, one from the Camino Real and one from the Convention Center. I'm leaning toward Camino Real right now just because they have a lower service fee, and also they've agreed to give us the event space at no charge. It's unclear right now whether or not the Convention Center could give us an additional room for brunch or if they would put on an additional charge, in which case that's a deal breaker. But you can look at those if you care to, and see what you think about the packages that they have put together in terms of what they are serving. It looks to be a fairly good menu selection of things for people on each day. And of course, it's overpriced because it's institutional. But I've tried to map it out as best as I could to, you know, spend Iwi's money wisely. But also, it's just going to depend on our final numbers, and that we won't know until we get closer, how many people we've got. And I'm also, you know, I'm positive that even if we've got 300 people registered for a particular day, that 300 people will not be turning up each day for brunch. But I don't really know, you know, what a good number to settle on there is. But anyway, that's where we are. I'm happy to take questions if anybody has.
Jim, on that last note, do they want us to give them an exact or pretty close number for number of attendees for brunch
on
a given day?
Can
we say we're going to have about 200, but it might be 225 or it might be 175? And, I mean, what would they respond to that? Would they say, well, you have to pay for 225 then?
Right. Whatever number we give them, that's the number they're going to charge us because they're going to prepare that much food regardless of how many people actually show up.
Okay, and so that's going to be the maximum number, right?
Right. We will give them the top-end number, and hopefully we won't run out of food, but hopefully we don't have a lot of food left over.
It's customary food again for hotels to prepare 10% more than your banquet order.
Say that again, Mike.
I say it's customary for food service to prepare 10% more than your banquet order. The other thing is we would only need to give them a count a week ahead of time, probably. I think that's the
right.
most they would ask for, 1 week.
But am I right, Mike, that the number we give them is that's going to be the cost, right?
That's what we'll be billed for, but they will prepare up to 10% more. That's common
sure.
in the food service industry. And they will charge us for the number of people served if that's the way we ordered it.
You mean if we have 10% more, they'll charge us 10% more?
Yeah, or, I mean, so let's say we order 200. If we order 200, they'll prepare enough food usually for 220 people. We must pay for the 200, and if 205 people show up, they will charge us for 205, if that's the way we tell them we want to have it ordered.
Gotcha. So, but then in terms of, are they going to have somebody counting people as they're seated, or do we give them that final count?
Well, we would give them a final count. Did you ask for a plated sit-down breakfast or a buffet?
No, these are all buffets.
Okay, well, then it would be a flat rate based on the number of people we tell them. And when the food runs out, it runs out.
Right.
Are these all-you-could-eat sort of buffets, then?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't think, it's just basically a buffet style, meaning that you go up and get your food. I don't think they're going to be policing people that go up twice.
Somebody has to meter the, you know, we have to control access to that in some way. Either a wristband or something. Otherwise, it's
right.
going to be a free-for-all.
Exactly. And that would be for people entering the space.
Mm-hmm.
And my thinking was that we do the same there that as we do at the gym, and that is find some volunteer that can just check for wristbands of people as they come in the door.
Yeah, it seems like the obvious thing and almost the only thing we can do.
Right.
Yep, we could also have a cash option at the door, too. If they don't have a wristband, they can pay us $15 at the door or something.
But only cover our costs
and a little profit.
Well, they can only pay us if we think we have enough food for more. Like if
That's
we suddenly
right.
are short on number of people who are taking advantage of this.
Yep.
It's too bad that we can't, you know, tell them 24 hours in advance rather than 7 days in advance. How many people to expect, because the first day is going to tell us a lot about how many people, and the second day will tell us more, and so each day we'll have a better idea of how many we're going to have the next day.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I can ask that question and see if we can give them a count, that late with that little notice, but... Yeah, I'm with
right.
Mike. My guess is they're going to want at least a week's notice, but I'll find out.
Well, the other thing is that they might be more amenable to having you adjust the number the day before. You know, like,
sure.
Okay, we're going to have 250 all week, but on Tuesday, you know, after lunch on Tuesday, we'll tell you how many, if that's really only going to be, you know, 10 or 5% less or more for the next day.
Right.
Something
right.
like that to let us
sure.
tweak it a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
This is Bob. Just from my experience going to the festivals, I would expect a steep decline in the breakfast, you know, people who take advantage, because the longer fests go on, the later they stay up, the less. And I'm not sure how we measure that, but I mean, I know people are staying up later and later the longer. I'm sure that first day is going to be unrealistically high. And then it's going to decline throughout the fest.
I think it won't decline that much. This is a pretty late thing. It's 10 to 12. Is that right?
Right. That's correct.
So you can cut it there, you know, 11:45 a.m. I mean, I might often sleep beyond noon, but if I get a free breakfast at 11:45, I'm likely to get up for it.
Yeah, but Martin, you and I are older. We value breakfast.
Well, as I say, there are many times I've slept past noon,
But, you know, an 11:45 brunch is a lot different from a 9:45 if they were cutting off at 10, which many of our, some of our places have.
Right.
You know, I've missed those.
Yeah, I think it's Holiday Inn that's offering free breakfast, and yeah, I'm sure that cuts off probably 9:30 or 10.
Yeah.
And so this is gonna be served people that that can't make up wake up for the hotel breakfast for sure.
Another thing we can do to get a better estimate for how many people are actually going to show up for this is just ask them. You know, we're going to have so many people registered. Some people will register at the last minute at the festival. We won't know about them, but all the people who have an event package or gym passes signed up in advance, we can ask them, you know, a week or two before the festival and say, you know, we're offering brunch on these days. Which days are you likely to make it, or how many days, you know, or whatever, something like that. I think that would be a helpful thing to ask, even if it doesn't give us an exact number.
Oh, I think that's a really great idea.
So you're talking about polling the registrants?
Yes, exactly.
Yes.
Through email, or, you know, whether we have them fill out a form online, or we just ask them to send back an email that says, you know, three people a day, or, you know, one, whatever. We get some idea of how many people are coming after brunch.
Well, and here's something else. You know, obviously we don't know exactly how many people, therefore we don't know exactly how much it's going to cost. So the question I would have for Iwi, if somebody can maybe find this out, is he going to fund brunch up to $25,000, or is he going to give us $25,000 for the festival to fund brunch, but say if we come in under that $25,000, you know, is he still going to give us the $25,000, I guess, is what I'm asking, and also, if we happen to go over 25,000, which I don't think we will by much, but if that happens, would he be willing to fund brunch altogether? So, yeah, I'm not sure the level of his commitment here, his or her commitment.
Isn't the 25K coming out of his annual 50K guaranteed donation, or is this an extra 25K? My impression it was the annual amount.
That's right. I believe it is the annual amount, and then the awards money was the unspent annual amount from last year.
Right.
That's correct.
So presumably, I mean, by default, we have to assume that there is no extra money if we go over 25K for this.
Right. But conversely, can we assume that if we come in under 25K that we get to keep the rest in the festival budget?
I would assume so, but you're probably only talking about less than $5,000, right?
Oh yeah, definitely.
So I don't think it's a big deal. No, we even have to raise that issue.
Okay.
Well, I'm not so sure about that because Iwi in the past has been very picky about things, and my personal opinion is I think we should check with him because he can be a very picky individual, and it seems he gets ticked off and we don't know why, and this would be a great example of we thought we were doing no big deal and he gets, you know, angry about it or something. So I think somebody needs to check with him.
Well, he's agreed to give us that money one way or the other. It's either going to go into the festival or our savings account. And about the only thing he might be able to, you know, specify is that if you don't spend it on brunch, you got to put it in the savings account. But we would get the money in any case because he's pledged it. So, I mean, you can ask him. I mean, it's not, I suppose it doesn't hurt to ask, but he's supposedly giving us the money one way or the other.
Well, I'm happy to ask, should I approach Andy Ford? Is he still the liaison for EWE?
I actually have his direct contact information via email. So if you want to send over any inquiries you have to me, I can just send that directly to Iwi.
I just have a feeling this would be better to do to check with him. I mean, who knows who he gets his information from if he's not there, and, you know, who puts a slant on it so we can tell him right above, you know, this is what's happening, and We're not sure, and what do you want us to do?
Sure.
On that note, I had a quick question, too, about the whole brunch situation. Given that it's going to be kind of like a buffet style, are we going to try to enforce quantity, or when someone's in, can they just go up and take as much as they want, as many times as they want? What's the thought
there? They can't leave with any food.
Obviously, they can't leave with any food, and that's another thing is in-and-out privileges. That could be hard to enforce, although whoever is, checking for wristbands at the door knows a lot of these people, and they would be able to catch if somebody's trying to come back in, although I don't think anybody's going to try and take advantage in that way. The question, though, once they're in, can they eat all they can eat, or do they just go up once? And I don't know of a way to police that. So my inclination would be to say, once you're in, you eat until you're full, and then you move on.
I just don't think this is going to be that big of an issue because, number one, I mean, I'm sure the hotel or whatever catering service we have has a generous, they have generous amounts. They're making over what we need. And number two is people are going to want to get there and juggle. I mean, they're not there for a luxury breakfast. You know, this is something to fuel them for free to go juggle. So I don't think they're going to be sitting there for hours, letting it digest and going up for seconds or thirds. They go for seconds, fine. Maybe they didn't take enough the first time. I mean, I just don't see it as a big problem.
I think I agree.
Okay. I was just curious. Any more discussion on the food stuff side of things?
This is Louis. I agree that the internet is much of a large problem.
Okay.
I didn't hear any of that.
Okay.
What did Louis say?
Louis said that it's a problem. Like, see how it goes a little bit. Any leftover money might be able to go to the next year, hopefully, with the amount of people, because I don't eat a lot. I know people eat more than me, so it's like I won't eat a lot, somebody else will eat a lot. It'll balance out sort of thing.
Exactly.
But all right. Jim, we're making a good move trying to find the right place to do it, so well done.
I don't know about everybody else, but I'm getting a lot of feedback from somebody. I can't understand.
Yeah, that's
it.
Probably my phone. I'm in the middle of the desert without a lot of reception, I believe.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah. I'm on mute sometimes, so it doesn't do that. Anyway, Jim, I think you're making the right move, finding a place other than the convention center, and you'll be able to estimate it a little bit, give them a kind of a beginner estimate, like a week out, but then hopefully tell them we're going to fine-tune it so they don't over-prepare and it's not a waste of food or money back and forth as much as possible. I think you're on the right track.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
And the hotel that you're looking at is the Camino Real, right? That's our primary hotel.
Yes, that is the one that is central to everything, and so it's just a block from the convention center. So it's going to be people can't cry foul because of the convenience factor. So.
And the people who are staying at that hotel are going to, hardly have to go anywhere at all to find it.
Exactly.
I think it's great.
Sounds good, guys. Anything else with the festival you want to talk about, Jim?
No, I think that is it. But if I think of something, I might pipe in later.
All right, sounds good. Any more questions, comments from the board?
Jim, do you have a workshop coordinator yet?
I have several people to choose from, but I'm going to sit with them this week and see which jobs that goes to. But I've got basically three positions and four people here in Austin that can cover it. I've also got access to Dave Pawson's notes from the last time he did it in 2014. So I feel pretty confident that we can make it run smoothly with the people we've got here.
Great.
Do you have a plan to start soliciting for people to teach workshops by a certain date using a certain system?
That's in Dave's notes, and yeah, it's just basically a Google form that people fill out, and I figure we would start soliciting people like in April, right up until probably the week or two before the fest.
Sounds good. All right, guys. If there's no more discussion on the festival side of things, we'll move on. Any final thoughts? All right. Go ahead, Mike.
I wanted to say something about Jim's comments about registration. What we bought is a membership and association management system. It does a hell of a good job managing our membership and our association. The board has decided that only members may register for the festival. Therefore, before you can register for the festival, you have to be a member. Now, this could all be simplified, and Jim's issues could be addressed very simply by allowing non-members to register for the festival at a higher price, something I think we suggested this year. I know I've suggested it in the past. That's my comment.
And I would definitely be in favor of that.
Well, if the higher price is, let's say, $29 higher, then, you know, I wouldn't fight that. Presumably you would put in the event registration an option to join for that $29 as opposed to just pay the extra fee.
Yeah, well, I would make it $49 so that it's blindingly obvious to anyone that they should join. But that also gives those who are philosophically opposed to being a member of anything a way to attend our festival and help our treasury at the same time.
I don't think... Oops. Well... So, Mike, you know you're not there, right? I don't think we're talking about people who are opposed to registering. To being members, we're talking about people who just haven't joined yet. And so Jim was talking about the fact that they have to join and then register separately. Well,
yeah, I think...
Okay, so, Mike, let me just say what I said while you were gone. Namely, I don't think we're worried about people who are opposed to being members. We're talking about people who are trying to sign up for the festival, and they aren't currently a member. Maybe they need to renew. Maybe they need to join. They're willing to do that, but they have to do it in a particular order. Namely, have to join, and then they go back to the form to register. So that, I think making that easier is what Jim was talking about. And so I don't think we need to make it, $49, but we just need to make it possible to join in the process of registering.
Now, I think you should actually charge more for non-members, more than $29 difference, because, like Mike said, the idea is to incentivize membership by saying, look, you can get this for $35 above cost, or you can pay $29 to be a member first and then and get it $35 cheaper. So, I think in order to really incentivize it, you want to make the difference more than the cost of membership.
This is Bob. I think we're talking to two different issues here. One is, I think what the first thing came up was it's a two-step process. You have to join, or renew, then you have to do it. And then the second issue is what we should charge for non-members who want to come. I think probably everybody agrees they should pay a lot more incentivize them to come. But I think if I'm understanding it correct, there's a two-step process where even, you have to renew first, then go back, and then sign up for the fest. And people, for some reason, are complaining about that. If I'm correct, I don't know.
That is correct. I've heard from people, from both people that are non-members, as well as people who are members, but of course their membership lapses before July, and they have to complete one registration before, or their membership has already lapsed, sorry, and then they have to renew their membership before they can go on to register.
Mike, did we have the same setup last year, or were people actually able to join and become a member on their registration form last year?
Yes, Martin. It was easier last year because the system was laid out a little bit differently, and I discussed this with Jim. The difference is this year we flipped a toggle switch that says you must be a member to register because those are the board's instructions. Last year, we made basically a store item that was a membership that you could purchase along with your festival registration. But that created a lot of work for us in that we had to check every registration to make sure the person was a member or not.
Okay.
This is Nathan. I just wanted to mention one thing here is I think this is, I'm not opposed to this idea. I think it would streamline a lot of things, but looking at a bigger picture here, we have to think about certain issues that could arise by this. The one that comes to mind is, this is not something that is a good thing, but occasionally it has happened where we've had to vote to not have certain members be a part of the organization for certain reasons, and if they can't join, they can't go to the festival. But if we're allowing this non-membership thing, this allows a loophole to any people that may have been prohibited from joining to then attend the festival. So that's something we have to keep in mind.
That is a very good point.
Yep, good point.
Well, we can still deny entry to anyone and refund their membership. I don't think that's an issue.
But under this new system, they wouldn't have to be a member. They could pay their extra $49 and come.
Yep, and we could deny them entrance at the door and give them their money back.
Yeah, but you have to have the board's permission to deny them entrance. That hasn't been settled. Whereas membership is settled.
And one of the problems is because it'll be going on at the festival because they show up, they show up at the last minute, you've got board members who are not there, board members who are getting off the board and are really not interested in partaking anymore, and we don't know who the new board members are till into the festival.
Well, the board would just have to set a policy, and it would do that in advance, saying anyone who's not permitted to be a member is not permitted to attend the festival. I don't know that that's worth making a motion to do that, but it's something to consider if you want to go to this situation of allowing non-members at the festival. Is the insurance no longer an issue about having non-members at the festival? That was one of the reasons we talked about this in the past.
Both Aaron and I talked to the insurance company about that. And they said as long as they're a registered attendee, they're covered. They do not need to be a member of the organization.
Okay, good.
Well, thanks for clarifying that. Yeah, we've been under a misinterpretation for the last decade that you had to be a member.
Well, that's not true. You did have to be a member. Previous insurance policies did require that attendees be members, but currently apparently not. Now, Jim, you said that people complained. They complained to you, I take it, about this two-step process?
Yes, because they know me and they know I'm the festival director, and so they come to me and say, I registered for the festival, but this really was not an easy experience. And most of them are people who, have plenty of web design experience, and they're looking at this system thinking, why does it have to be this complicated? And,
How many people
about five.
Contacted you? Five.
About five or six, yeah.
Okay. We also had some issue where some people couldn't get their membership signed up because there was a technical problem with the website having to do with entering birth dates. I don't know exactly what that deal was, but I assume it was not affecting too many people. That was a technical issue.
I heard something about that, but I didn't get any feedback on that directly.
So these five or so people who had this problem, they had to go through the process of signing up as a member, as anybody does who just wants to be a member. And that process shouldn't be very difficult. And then they had to go through the process of signing up for the festival, which is exactly what any member would do. So I'm not quite sure why it was more difficult, other than they had to do these two steps. Was there some delay between the two?
So they had to do two steps, but also the instructions aren't entirely clear. Like, for instance, once you complete your membership, you get an email saying that you've completed your membership, but then you get another email saying that that you have to go in and confirm your membership. And it's not until you do that step that you can actually access the period. So in the meantime, they're trying to go back and register for the festival, but the system won't let them in because they've not yet confirmed their membership.
Okay, so we might need a little better documentation of that confirmation step. The confirmation step, I believe, is basically just to confirm your email address so you're not signing up somebody else's email address.
Right, and I think you're right. I think it could be clarified. I mean, if the instructions were a little more clear, then people would know more what to expect. But people, I mean, this is first time for everybody on this, and so members and non-members alike were looking at it and thinking, well, this seems a little bit obtuse. It's not your typical web purchasing experience.
Did you get complaints from people who had to renew and couldn't figure out how to renew?
I did. I got one complaint from somebody who was a renewing member, and then I got several complaints from people who were just joining for the first time. As I mentioned to Mike, my main concern are those people, the people that have never joined the IJA before. And my concern was that they would come to this website, see what a hassle it was, and say, oh, well, I don't have time to deal with this now. I'll come back to it. And then they never come back to it, or, finances dry up. And so we may have lost those people forever. I mean, there's just no way to know. So that's my main concern with all of this, is that we are potentially losing people. And I don't think it's a lot of people, but it's enough that we should pay attention to it.
Well, we certainly want to make this easy for people to join. And it sounds to me like the only issue really was this activation step. Is that your feeling?
I think that certainly was part of it. But, honestly, I'd have to go back to each of those people and say exactly what was the problem. I didn't really delve that much into it because, frankly, I don't have time. But, they basically just say, this process sucked. I don't think it should be this hard. So I'm just taking that and bringing that feedback to the board. But, yeah, you need somebody that can really analyze the system and figure out how to make it better and more user-friendly.
Okay, if you don't mind, would you forward to me the email addresses of the people that issued, these sort of complaints? You can forward me their emails, too, if you feel comfortable doing that, because I would like to research this a little bit and see what the real issue was. I mean, I know that you told us there's a problem, but if we don't know the exact problem, and if it's five different problems, maybe we need to fix five problems. But I'm guessing it's really one or two problems. So it would be good to get the exact feedback from these people.
Sure.
Hello, guys. This is Louis. Can I jump in for a second? I think 10 to 12 people possibly out of 189 with a couple bit of hiccups and stuff is still pretty good for the amount of people registering. I think the Get Smart group hopefully will be able to help make some of these things smooth or help us choose sort of the during when we since we're working on the new website, getting some of this information to Aaron and the website group and the Dip Smart group might help. They might be able to jump in and help streamline the process. And because we don't want to lose anybody straight from the start, like you were saying, Bob, like if they want to click, one click, get on there, take care of it. And then, Martin, I think going through and getting all that information for those individual users and having stuff we can take to Mike and the Dip Smart group is definitely the way to go as part of the next step in the process. But I think we did pretty good, like only getting 10 to 12 complaints. Like every time you make a system where people are registering, there's going to be a few people who fall through the cracks. But I think there's also something to it. It's an evolving thing. First time with YM, the second, the third time are going to be much smoother.
And to tell the truth, I mean, I've gone through the process of what you have to do to join, and we have two or three, perhaps two verbose pages that tell you how to join. Other than this activation, I can't remember a particular issue that really comes up. So I'd be happy to hear what these people have said.
Yeah, some of them were just people that, you know, they're people here in Austin, and so they know me, and they just sort of mentioned it to me in passing. But I did get at least two responses by email, but I can ask the others if they would be interested in giving more specific feedback, and I'll direct them to you.
Great, thanks.
All right, yeah, I think it's all on the right path. It's a good start, and Mike and Martin set that up, and that's rolling along pretty nice. It's nice to see it working, kind of our first time in the system like that. So it's good. But I also never want the festival director to have to feel that, hey, our website isn't working smooth. Like, I always want the festival director to say, hey, go to our website. It's completely easy. So I think we're evolving to that.
All right, guys. That ran a little long, but I think we got a lot of positive discussion out of that. So unless there's any objections, I'd like to move right along to the next report. Okay. Moving on to marketing. Erin Stevens is not here, but she did submit a report. Any discussion on marketing?
I'd just like to say the Mexican ad that she put out, I thought was excellent that they promoted us very well and said these three people are going to the IJA, you know, had our logo. I thought that was excellent.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Aaron's really been handling a lot of that IRC stuff too and making all that web sort of stuff, the Instagram things, all that. She's really been rocking it.
Good stuff, guys.
Yeah, this is Jim, and I agree. I mean, Aaron is absolutely doing a great job. Having said that, though, it would be nice to be able to figure out a way so that we can see exactly what impact all of the social media stuff is having. I mean, there's no question that those videos she's putting out, they look great, they're fantastic, they make us look good. But at the end of the day, what exactly is the impact, and does it translate to more registrants?
I don't think fully it does right now, honestly. I think it's a growing seed that we're trying to figure out where our new membership is coming from and where, because obviously if our numbers have been going down, we got to kind of change something up a little bit. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the pricing or the benefits or what we need to do to increase those numbers, but I don't think it's hurting as far as generating some new interest in the IJA and making the IJA stronger somehow, even if it's along around the edges and it's not the full center right now. I think the full center would be more people coming to the festival with that early bird registration, more of that sort of push and stuff is where I'd like to see things grow. I feel like it's not growing right now in America. It's growing outside of America. I'm interested in cultivating that for hopefully future returns to the IJA.
This is Bob. I agree with Jim that I am very, in one way, skeptical of all these likes and views and all that, because unless they join, it means nothing to us. But on the other hand, maybe it is a long-term effect. We have to take the long view and say, okay, maybe they will join eventually. But we have to have some way of knowing, because we are spending a lot of effort on this stuff, and while it's great, and I appreciate it too, unless it brings in some members, or attendees, we're in trouble.
Yeah, where are we going to get those new members? I want them from everywhere. Why have the numbers just slipped every month?
Well, I think that's a whole other discussion. We go on
for
hours about that.
Yeah,
we don't want to get into that. So probably.
I know.
But, I mean, I think, some people say it's just a social thing, that people just don't join things now. And that could very well be true. You know, I mean, that we're fighting a tide like newspapers. People just don't get hard.
This is Marvin. I have something to say. It is juggling, though, you know. Like I sell juggling equipment, so I totally get it. Like, because I do it, like I have to do the marketing to get the name out there, and then you have to educate the people from the slow little beginning when they don't even know how to juggle, to get them juggling, to get them to like juggling, to get them to love juggling, to get them to pay for juggling, to get them to see juggling, and then to get them to the event. So it's a long process, but you know, it's part of it.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Yeah.
Good thoughts, Marvin.
Because juggling is hard, you know. It takes time to get people to like juggling, even or even do juggling. So it's part of the process. It's needed to get juggling out there, to get people exposed to juggling before they even pay $200 to come to a juggling event. So you need to grow these seeds into like flowers before they even bloom.
Yes. Yeah, and it might even be more than 200 they put out in the end if they're coming from another country or coming from somewhere far across America. They could be putting $500 easy into the event of coming to our IJA festival and becoming a member and stuff. You got to grow it. Thanks.
Good thoughts, guys. If you have any further input about marketing or analytics, feel free to use the forums and discuss any ideas there. I'd like to keep moving along in the name of time unless we have any further discussion on the marketing side of things. Moving on to YJA, Ellen did submit a report this month. You can read it there. Sounds like the buttons are a big hit. Any discussion on YJA? All right, guys, moving right along to eJuggle report. Scott submitted a report. You can read it there. Any discussion with eJuggle? Did you guys watch the Mind Blown video on BBB?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
That was very well received and very well made. That was very, very good. I'm excited to see more of the Mind Blown stuff. I think that's a really good idea. Also curious to see if we're able to get the complete juggler on eJuggle. That's an interesting thing. I hadn't heard that before, so I'm curious to see how that pans out.
Can I just ask, and I mean, I don't want to put anybody in the spot, but I have not seen the Mind Blown. Has anybody else not watched it?
I haven't seen it.
I only watched half.
This is Shabela. I saw the video and I haven't watched it. I saw it there, but I didn't watch it.
Right. Okay. I just wanted that feedback too, because the people who are for things go, oh yeah, this is the greatest thing because I clicked on it and I sat there and watched it, but we still have this problem of getting people to watch what we actually have out there. So, I mean, I think this presents exactly what what I fear. I said, yeah, it's great to have great videos, but people have to watch them.
Do you think maybe we could...
Exclusive?
Yes, it was a collaboration video, the first in a series called Mind Blown, where a certain theme of trick is presented, and a group of jugglers who specialize in said trick. So submit clips of them doing it, and then it's edited together in an IJA release. It's on eJuggle. It was one of the big posts this week, and it's also on Facebook. I'm wondering, it's not members only. No, it can be viewed by anybody. Yeah, I'm wondering if maybe you want to talk to Aaron or Scott if it's worth, like, mentioning this new series in the newsletter, because it's like a lot of people that read the email newsletter don't read eJuggle and the Facebook quite as much. So, you know, it might be worth mentioning there as a new series, a little background on it if you deem fit. Just an idea.
Sounds like a good idea if it's a worthwhile video series. And if it's really good, then, you know, maybe it should be members only.
That's something to think about, too, yeah. Any more discussion about why?
It seems they got 358 likes on Facebook and 300 shares. That's pretty good.
Some pretty good metrics, I'll say. All right, any more discussion about eJuggle? Moving along to membership. The spreadsheet is there as usual. Any comments, discussion on membership numbers? Good news, guys. We're up. I wonder why.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well.
Yeah, the yearly surge.
Yeah, the yearly
surge. Great.
Still nice to see, though. Still nice to see.
Always good. Always good.
Cool. Any discussion, guys?
How much is it up this month?
We had, and 1-1, the toll members were at 1,173. And as of 3-1, they're at 1,219. So that's what, about 50, 66, I think? 46, 50, 56, yeah. Yeah, so we're, you know, usual surge for festival registration.
Yeah, but keep in mind that 3-1 date is before festival registration went live, is it not?
By a few days, I think, yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I wonder if people registered, like, on 3-1 intending to register because it was announced like that, or maybe they're just gearing up, or I don't know.
Well, some of these dates might be from the past when people have renewed or had different dates of the festival or the early bird spread early, so there's 100 people that come up to renew at the beginning of March just because of that's where they started 20 years ago or 10 years ago.
That's a good point, Louis. That could be it also.
Yeah, I'm sure there's an effect there. In the old days, a lot of people used to renew at the festival or as they registered for the festival. And you know, those dates sort of, if they keep renewing, that's their date. Can you tell me how much the number went up from the, I guess, the leftmost column? I think that's the lowest number. That's the raw memberships. I think you included family memberships or something.
Yeah, okay, so, well, we don't have data for 2-1. Do you know why that is, Mike? Did Marilyn mention anything about that?
What's the question, Nate?
There's
one on a cruise.
Yeah, oh, okay.
Yes, they're gone.
Yeah, okay. So what data field are you looking for, Martin? Membership records? Not including?
Yeah.
Okay, so membership records. 1-1 was 961. On 3-1, we're looking at 1,011. So that would be what, 60?
Exactly, 50.
50?
61 and 11?
So oh, 50. Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah, so 50 members in that two-month span.
Oh, I'm actually surprised. I'm happy to see it, but
yeah.
Maybe so. I'm trying to figure out what the glitch is. What's the effect? Why did that happen?
I know when we had that Big West video last year, we saw a surprisingly good hike, but we have not had any new membership perks that I'm aware of as of late. So yeah, that is interesting.
Yeah, and if you look at the same if you look at the same time period for 2015, membership was steady and slowly declined until May, but that's because we had a later registration period for Quebec.
Right, that was all the April registrations coming in with memberships last year.
Right.
Oh, good. Any more thoughts on this, guys? I don't want to dwell too much, but good news from here. Cool. Moving right along to IRCs. Aaron did submit a report. Any discussion on the IRC side of things? Okay, moving right along. Last discussion item is future festival site planning. Any updates, Mike?
Nope, I'm headed off to the NASC symposium in Grand Rapids beginning of the month, where I'll meet with up to 80 prospective venues or cities for our 2019 festival. So probably get some really good leads out of that, start working on those over the summer.
Excellent. Where are you flying into, Mike?
Grand Rapids.
Ah, of course, straight into Grand GR. Nice. Good stuff. Okay, any discussion? Excellent, hope that goes well. Moving on to motions for considerations. First motion on the agenda is the motion to appoint Jared Davis to the vacant board position. Would someone like to make this motion?
Louis, I'll make the motion.
I heard a jumble, but Louis's beautiful voice shone through, so we're going to go with Louis.
Oh, beautiful.
Do we have a second?
This is Louis. I'll second it.
Oh. Well, okay. So, Louis, you made the motion. We need a second from someone else.
I'll second it.
All right, thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
Moving on to discussion. I'm sure this is pretty straightforward. I'm sure everyone's aware. Jared Davis has volunteered to serve the duration of Warren Hammond's term, which goes through this July. So it's a pretty short fill-in, but Jared was on board recently, so he's fairly familiar with what's going on in terms of our current operations. Any discussion, guys? Moving to vote, does anybody abstain from the appointment of Jared Davis to the vacant board position? Would anyone like to oppose this motion? Motion passes unanimously. I will inform Jared and get him onboarded to the board. Moving on, motion B, the motion is pending availability through the IJA's insurance agent. Group insurance can be purchased or renewed annually by an IJA affiliate through the IJA insurance agent at the IJA rate, provided that at the time of purchase and renewal, the affiliate's membership includes 5 or more current IJA members who have indicated through their IJA logins that they are members of the affiliate. For purposes of confirming that affiliate eligibility for IJA insurance rates, an IJA member cannot be listed in their IJA login as a member of more than one affiliate in a given calendar year. Would someone like to make this motion?
I'll make the motion.
Thank you, Bob. Do we have a second?
This is Louis, I'll second.
Thank you, Louis. If he agrees to do so, I would actually like to turn this over to Jim Maxwell, the affiliates director, to kind of, if there's any, because I know some of the board members, I don't think we're in on this discussion, to kind of fill in what this is exactly about. Would you like to speak briefly, Jim?
Sure. We've had a couple of requests, or I should say Dale Wittick has had a couple of requests
from IJA affiliates asking about an insurance policy for their club. The situation, the reality is that a lot of clubs are having a problem with meeting space, and even the ones that have meeting space, the owners of those facilities are now coming around and saying, hey, do you guys have insurance? And so there is a need for affiliate clubs to have an affordable policy that would cover them for their annual or for their weekly meetings. And then I spoke to Dale Wittig when this came up and talked to him because I had talked to him years ago about this same thing. And it was quite a different story, but he explained to me that back then he was working for, I can't remember the name of the company he used to work for, but now he's basically branched off and started his own agency, and is now willing to write a policy for a club, provided that they are IJA members, because that is the agreement that we have with him. I asked him if what about clubs that also need a certificate of insurance for an annual festival, and he said yes, absolutely, no problem. So that's when I started the discussion between Nathan and Martin, as well as Mike and Marilyn, about the possibility of having a classification of IJA affiliate. For which Dale could then write insurance policies for. And after some discussion there, we decided that the simplest thing for right now is just to do it based on the same rule that it was in place the last time we had an active affiliates program, and that was for 5 IJA members in order for that affiliate to be recognized for purposes of writing this insurance policy. So, that's where we are.
So the affiliate, they have to apply for affiliate status first. Is that correct?
Well, so here's the thing. Right now, we've got a list of affiliates because we essentially suspended our affiliates program because it was neglected. And
right.
Then a couple of years ago, Noel and Lloyd Timberlake and myself went through the arduous process of contacting all of the affiliates and updating their information. And then when we moved into YM, I loaded all of that affiliate data in there. So we currently have a bank of affiliates, I'm guessing around 60 or 70 affiliates from the last time that this was active. But of course, you know, most of those, you know, they no longer have the requisite number of memberships. So if we are, this motion does not address that. This motion simply addresses if an affiliate who does have 5 current members
right.
wants to buy insurance, then this motion gives cover for that to happen. But the broader issue about the affiliates program still needs to be discussed and determined, and hopefully after El Paso, I, as the affiliates director, will get back on that and see what we can make of the affiliates program. But for now, we have a need and requests, and I thought that this was a worthwhile thing to put to the board and see if we can't at least get you know, a handful of affiliates with insurance coverage that they desperately need, and also in the process, we might generate a few more memberships.
Oh, I agree. Good idea.
Yes, Louis agrees.
And the affiliate program still exists. I mean, it has not been terminated. As Jim says, it was sort of abandoned, but that just means we weren't doing anything with it. But the affiliates still existed as affiliates. Our rule did not require, you know, annual proof of 5 members. And so they're still affiliates, and therefore, if they want to apply for this, then they do have to show us they have 5 members to get the insurance. But new groups could also become affiliates by following the old rule, which was have 5 members, 5 IJ members, and pay $25. That's a one-time fee. So it's eligible, you know, this is optional, available to new groups as well.
And any questions?
They might want to consider changing, you know, changing rules for affiliation, but that's how things sit now. And I don't see any urgent need to change that, but certainly the board can consider that later.
Yeah, I would like to actually talk, I'll schedule an affiliates meeting at El Paso. And would love to get some feedback from some of them. But yeah, I would like at some point to address the fundamental, what does it mean to be an affiliate? What does it require of the affiliate, and what benefits can the IJA offer in return? I mean, that is the long view of what we should be working toward. But for now, this is an immediate benefit that we could potentially offer to a few groups that desperately need it.
Right. Oh, this is about, you know, this is probably the best, at the moment at least, a very good thing that we can offer them, and something that we don't offer much else at the moment.
This is one of our best membership benefits right now. I love it. Because we can start clubs going in places, which is something that's great. Actually, people getting together and juggling. So
right.
It's wonderful that we can make that happen for groups of people who are earnest about it.
Yep.
I wouldn't say we can start clubs going, but we can enable clubs to start going if they need insurance.
That's what I'm saying. Like, sometimes people maybe are like, oh, we can't get our club together because we can never quite find a place. But if it helps them do that, that's great.
Right. And this is all at no cost to IJA.
Correct. Any more thoughts, guys? Comments, questions?
The only other thing is just to be sure, the insurance agent, this is all through him and everything. This is part of the system they want to set up and have the affiliates through them, and we feel good about that whole deal going on, because I believe that was, like, in the past it was there, but then it was pulled away or something.
The agent is fine with this.
Right.
He transferred from one company to another or something, as Jim said, but Marilyn is fine, seems to be fine with it too.
Perfect.
She would be the one who would have to be, you know, looking up the affiliate to see if they had five members. But that's a straightforward thing with the new website.
Great. Awesome. Thank you.
All right, guys. I'm going to move to a vote. Does anybody oppose this motion? Would anyone like to abstain? Motion passes. Excellent. I think this would be a very good thing. And I guess we can be in touch, Jim and Martin, about approaching Dale or however we want to go about doing this, so we can touch base offline.
Okay, with your permission, I can call Dale tomorrow, but if you think further discussion is needed.
I don't see any. You have my permission. Does anyone disagree with that?
The only thing is we need to try somebody else talking. We need to publicize how groups would do this. Namely, they would tell their members, and I'll confirm this with Marilyn, but she suggested the organization field, which is a field that a user can fill in when they go to the website, log into the IJA website, the YM website, and they can put in the organization field the name of their affiliate. And when five people do that who are current members, then that enables the affiliate to get the insurance. So they just need to know, the members or the affiliates need to know how to tell their members to fill in that place and what field to fill in. That's for the publicity.
Okay. Yeah, so, thank you, Jim. Just let us know what Dale says and if anything else is needed before a policy is drafted.
Will do.
Thank you much. All right, moving on to Varia. Just a couple quick items here. The first one, Lucas Cup Repair. I just kind of wanted to talk about this for a while, or briefly, I should say. So as most of you are aware, I am currently housing the Lucas Cup in my basement, And one of my goals has been to try to get it refurbished before the next festival. It's been kind of a slow process, and it's on the back burner. It's not a high priority. At least it wasn't initially, but after reaching out to several trophy repair organizations and several different metal workers, I have not found anybody that is willing to take on such a substantial project. I was even able to track down the company that made the Lucas Cup and come to find out they don't actually even make trophies anymore. They just make varsity rings and jackets. So needless to say, I'm having some issues with that, and Albert has been very busy and hasn't responded to some of my more recent messages. So I just wanted to see if there was anyone out there that would be interested in volunteering to kind of help take on this quest to find a vendor that could potentially repair this, or if any board members knew anybody that did sort of metalworking or anything in general that could be of benefit to us.
I'm not familiar. I know the Lucas Cup, but I mean, is there something special about it that makes it difficult?
Well, the issue I'm having is a lot of people, when they do, like, you know, trophy repair and stuff, they're mainly replacing screws and adjusting plates and polishing out dents. But the Lucas Cup, we basically need to have an entire tier added to the bottom and then an entire new, like, plate added that then has, like, the upgraded new names engraved, because it hasn't, the champions list hasn't been updated on it since 2007. So it's way behind, and it's out of space. Then in addition to that, we need to straighten out some of, like, the parts on it that are actually, like, physically bent, and the case is, the interior of the case is pretty much destroyed. It's so old that it's just crumbling apart, the foam in it. So, but a lot of people just don't do things like adding new custom-made tiers to third-party trophies that they themselves didn't design. That's the biggest hurdle I'm finding.
I actually may be of some service here. I put on sporting events for 10 years, so I may have some vendors that could take it on. This is Shavala, by the way.
Ooh, that's awesome, Shavala. Would you mind, could you...
No.
What?
I said no, I don't mind at all.
Oh, I thought you were like, no, I'm not going to do it.
Hell no.
Touch base with me offline, and I can send you some photographs of it, as well as some kind of, like, details. And I'm thinking if we can find a vendor, I can then reach out to Albert a little more strongly and see what his ideas are, and if he's okay with those. So, but yeah, that'd be awesome, Shavala.
This is Jim. Have we actually approached the company that has been making our metals for the last several years? I have no idea the extent of work that they do, but have we even approached them about it? I think they're called Hasty.
Yeah. I have not spoken with Hasty. I don't think they do trophies, but it's worth a shot. So that's a good idea, Jim. I will mention this to them and see if they can do anything with that.
Well, I was going to say, because I actually owe them an email now. I've got to go through the inventory and see exactly how many metals that we're going to need for the IJA. I've got an email that I already owe to them. So, I can just give you her information, and if you want to inquire separately.
Well, it's up to you, but if you're already sending them an email, yeah, if you could, go ahead and mention that. Make sure you mention it requires some structural build, not just, you know, replacing screws and polish, but actually adding a circular tier with a new plate on it, in addition to a few tweaks. But I think that's the main thing that's kind of preventing a lot of people from looking into this. But, that would be...
So go ahead and copy me on the email that you sent to Shavala with the pictures and everything.
Perfect. I can do that. Cool, guys. I appreciate the help. Go ahead, Bob.
This is just Bob. Yeah, as an aside, we may want to look at getting a new Lucas Cup. if it's going to be cheaper. You know, just bite the bullet and get something new we can add more names to. You know, I mean, if it's going to be so expensive to do redo that cup, I mean, you know, and if Albert Lucas doesn't like it, then we won't call it the Lucas Cup anymore. I mean, it's just, I mean, because it's kind of silly to spend a tremendous amount of money on this because it's sounding like it's going to be very expensive. And
okay,
anyway.
Yeah, that's a too.
So here's another devil's advocate question. Do we need a Master Lucas Cup? No one ever gets to see it except at the festival. The rest of the year it's stored somewhere, and somebody has to dig it out, ship it. The winner each year gets a smaller. So the winner gets an individual one each year. And is that paid for by Lucas, by the way?
Yes. Albert does pay for the smaller Lucas cups. He has a vendor he goes through that they produce, and he ships those to the festival or whomever is transporting them.
So it seems to me that it would simplify things enormously if we just, and I'm sure you want to run this by Lucas, but if, you know, we just eliminated the master one or made the master one a plaque, you know, with all the names on it, which would be simple, and the fancy one went to the individual winner. It makes more sense to me.
Because I think when this was created, there was hopes of a juggling museum somewhere, you know, that this was, and Albert had this whole thing about it being accepted into the Olympics and all that, and that's long past. So, I mean, to have this cup, you know, that nobody ever sees, it's kind of crazy to pay a lot of money for it.
Exactly.
Yeah, and this is Jim. And similarly, we have a team's trophy that currently is among the things that are stored at my house. But am I correct that the team's trophy doesn't actually hold the names of individual winners? But is there a separate team's trophy that is awarded each year, or is that, or do they just get medals?
They get a team's trophy. They get the trophy that shows one juggler doing a leapfrog over another.
Yeah.
I think the one that you have is just one of those that's not in good repair. It's an identical trophy, and do you remember seeing if it was indeed in disrepair?
It's got a few scratches on the plaque, and one of the clubs has been bent down and bent back up. It's hardly noticeable at all, but yeah, it's got a little bit of disrepair. But I wasn't sure if it was similar to the Lucas Cup, in that this is just the one that gets trotted out every year for show. And then I wasn't sure if the actual first place winners get a replica or another team's trophy.
Yeah, they get one each year. What I don't remember offhand is whether they get one for. I guess they just get one, or do they get one per person?
No, they get one per person. They get one per person, from what I remember them saying on stage, even, because, you know, some years.
Even the Jughead.
So did the Jughead get 15 of them when they won?
So here's how it's working, to my understanding. Each team that wins gets one trophy, as is funded and donated by the passing zone.
Right.
But depending on the number of people in their team, everybody in their team gets a medal for whatever place they came in.
Right.
Okay, I mean, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Otherwise, we'd have people praying that the Jughead didn't win.
Right.
Expensive. Okay, so they get one trophy each year. So I don't know why we... Maybe the trophy that we have
got bent, and therefore they didn't want to give it to somebody, and so we kept it. But if there's nothing we can do with it, I give it away. If we don't want to give it out because it's bent, then, you know, maybe we just retire it, discard it, or use it to make the next one or something, and not have to carry around an extra trophy.
Here, here.
That's true. That's if, assuming we only give out one trophy each year.
Okay. Well, I'm thinking I'll get some options for vendors, and I can run this by Albert, and I might even mention the idea of, you know, if it's something we want to retire eventually or even now, depending on cost. But I think it would behoove us to kind of acquiesce to kind of some of his vision, because he is very generous with a lot of these trophies that the people do take home every year. That is a very good thing. So I kind of want to make sure that at least to some degree we're adhering to his vision. Is that any more thoughts on that, guys? All right. Well, we can look into that, and we'll be further discussion regarding how this pans out. Item B, Avaria. Mike Sullivan has added this. This is his last year as festival registrar. So this is Mike Sullivan's last year as festival registrar. Would you like to talk about this a little bit, Mike?
Well, been working at the IJA desk all week during the festival since about 2006, and that's enough. I want to get my vacation back and turn it over to somebody else, because I'm going to be 60 years old next year, and somebody needs to pick up the torch.
We appreciate all the hard work you've done for the last decade, Mike. It's been insurmountable. Do we want to have a plan about how we want to proceed about finding another person, or do we want to implement a different system for this beginning in 2017? I feel like this is something we shouldn't wait on too long, because this could be difficult to find somebody with just a few months' notice if we put this on the back burner until, you know, until early 2017. So, any thoughts on how
to... It'd be nice to publicize it through Facebook and the e-newsletter. And hopefully we'll get some people interested, tell them there's a festival comp in it, and I can train them.
Can you put that in the next newsletter, Martin, that we're looking for a registrar going forward, free comp, and training available on site?
Certainly. Mike, can you write up a description of what it entails and how many hours and so forth?
Sure.
And we'll stick that in and send it to Don and me, and we'll get it in the next newsletter.
Okay.
And, Mike, what system are you currently using on site for payment? Do you use Square, or what exactly, how do you take payment?
Yes, we take Square and cash and checks. And it's really easy with Square, but the main thing is just getting all the registration data organized before the fest, and producing the packets and helping the festival director with things like T-shirt orders, ticket orders, logistics, T-shirt chips, all of that kind of stuff. You know, the administration part of running the festival.
And am I correct in that we no longer do the smart cash register that we used to get every year?
No, Square register is far, far, far superior in every way to that. Plus, the fees for using credit cards with Square are lower than we were paying Bank of America without the benefits that Square gives us. So Square is clearly the best solution for us.
Is there any reason we couldn't separate the two parts of the job, namely pre-registration and on-site registration, into two different people?
Well, no, but I think it helps a lot to have continuity so that the person who organized everything is also on site to run it once the festival happens.
Okay. Well, maybe we put out a feeler in the newsletter and we can kind of flesh this out a little bit more depending on any interest we get. Any more comments on this, guys? Excellent.
I don't have a comment on that particularly, but in a related vein, where are we with the proposal from the Kansas City crew for 2017?
Ah, good question, Jim. So I actually invited Greg to join us on tonight's call. He said he didn't feel that was necessary. Where we are at right now is I spoke to him a little over a week ago via phone. They talked a little bit about their team model, just that they don't really have an idea for someone leading it. They mainly just want to have an organic approach. And they're really leaning on the whole 10 comp situation for this year's festival to really research it. And I gave the counter proposal that we suggested. They didn't seem that interested in that, and Greg said he was basically going to have to talk to Cheryl, who is currently in Mexico right now at Doug Sayer's wedding, and he said once he talks to her, then he'll get back to me and hopefully have a better idea of what their decision is. So that's kind of where we are now.
Thank Just you. Keep in mind that the cost won't cost us really that much. A T-shirt is really about it, but I presume we would be foregoing some revenue from those people if they would attend otherwise.
At least one of their festival members is already registered. I looked today.
And I think if we don't do it, I mean, I think they're going to be a no-go, which is, you know, not putting a negative spin on it or a positive. But I just think they are not going to go for it. And I'm not sure that organic approach, I bow to Jim and Mike and Martin, who have much more experience in organizing festivals, but I'm not sure that organic approach is what we really want to go with.
Any thoughts on that, guys?
I mean, the question is whether you can do that without having one person in charge, right? That's the issue?
Exactly.
Yes.
So if you don't have one person overseeing, then for any given issue, you're not quite sure who's doing it, and you're not even sure who to ask who's doing it. So, I mean, you can email all 10 people.
Over.
You can email all 10 people for every question, but if you're running outside somewhere, or if you're on the board, or if you're a member, who do you talk to?
I think the issue is that Greg is reluctant to be that person in charge because of some personal things he's got going on, and so their idea for asking for the 10 comps is to get their full team there so that they can see what it looks like, and then they would have a leader sort of organically emerge from that. That's the impression that I got, but maybe Nathan knows more to that than I do. But I agree, it's not possible to have have a group. you can't do this by committee. I mean, at the end of the day, you have to have somewhere that the buck stops.
Well, and we learned this in Quebec. I mean, nobody was responsible for money, it seems, you know, so nobody could answer our question, so we can't have that again.
Yeah, no, and maybe, I mean, in any group of 10 people, I would think that there would probably be one or two who would be sort of natural leaders, but maybe they're all very hard hard and fast followers. I mean, I don't know.
Well, I'm sure they're national, you know, leaders. But I mean, when the rubber hits the road, and we ask, where does this money go from? Then they all point to, you know, I don't want this garbage again where everybody points to each other and goes, I don't know, you have to ask them. You know, and it's just like, well, it's our money. You know, I just, same thing. I want somebody responsible.
I'm appreciating Jim running the current year's system. It feels like there's somebody in charge who we can go to, who's handling it, who has the information they feel they need, and they're giving to the rest of the group and everything. There needs to be that one person, I feel. And even if that one person needs to be coached a little bit through it or have a little bit of support, there still needs to be somebody answerable. Which they're not giving us, but also nobody else is stepping up to handle it. So I feel like we can adjust it a little bit for them if they want to do it this way, as long as they know we're looking for one of you to step up to be the responsible party.
I'm thinking maybe I'll just kind of wait to hear back from Greg. My understanding is that Cheryl's going to be back this week, so hopefully he can touch base with her and they can discuss whatever they need to, and he can give us a better update. Then I'll let the board know, most likely by forum post, and we can discuss from there. Does that sound like a plan, guys?
Yeah, fine with me. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, we got a little time, but well, yeah, we do need to kind of start focusing on this in the next couple months pretty hard,
yeah.
But...
Mike, are you still interested in doing the future festivals, festival coordinator action?
Yes.
Great, because I think you've got a great handle on what that is and how that works.
Also, Mike, do you have any intention of leaving your role as sort of the contact person for the YM site?
I guess not. I don't want people to think that I'm the IGA's webmaster or IT administrator or anything. But the amount of work that I do with YM is mostly related to festival registrations and festival stuff. So,
yeah.
Eventually somebody will have to find another generation of people to take that over and membership. But membership is so highly automated now that Marilyn doesn't mind keeping that job.
Okay. Well, Mike, is it the case that, the current webmaster is David Landown. Does he not do anything with YM?
I don't think he does.
So perhaps the board should also be looking for a webmaster or IT administrator who could delve into YM and really approach it from that level. I mean, with all due respect, David's done a great job, but if we've moved on to an environment that he's not comfortable with, then maybe it's time to find a new webmaster.
Well, the fact is that YM is a totally different animal as it is, and there is a project to, you know, upgrade it, and I think finding a webmaster for the YM site is premature at this point, just because we don't quite know what it's going to involve. Maybe it would be much simpler than what David has to do with the old site, since it's more automated, but on the other hand, it's less flexible, and that's where, you know, what David can do and add stuff to the old site, where that comes in handy. But most of the stuff that he does there, we can't even do on the new site. You know, we can't create arbitrary trees of pages, I mean, without just going through their forms.
Yeah.
We can't have different menus on different pages and that sort of thing.
All right, well, that's something to think about. Any last bits of thoughts, guys? Cool. That being the case, I'd like to move on to set our April meetings with the board. So for a vision planning meeting, 2 weeks from today would be the 4th, or we could do the 11th. Does either of those work better? All right, then let's go with the 4th. They're both fine for you?
Yeah.
All right, let's go with the 4th then. As far as the board meeting goes, the 18th does not work very well for me. Babies. So if that's okay, if that's okay, I'd like to propose that we meet next on the 25th. Will that work for people?
Yes.
Works great.
Perfect. I'll put that on my calendar. Thanks for writing that in. Moving on to adjournment, would someone like to make a motion to adjourn?
Shavela, I will.
Thank you very much, Shavela. Any discussion? All right. Great job, guys. Yeah.
Okay. I'm probably not going to make the 25th.
Okay. Thanks for letting me know. All right, guys. Moving to a vote. Does anybody oppose adjournment? Any abstentions? Meeting is adjourned at 9:17 p.m. Thank you.
Thank you for typing, Shavela. Thank you all.
Thank you. Thank you.